middle of it. For this reason, wilderness areas must be set aside now before more additional exploration and development is even thought of. Otherwise, we will again be too late. Wilderness, too, is a natural resource, a non-renewable resource, at least from the standpoint that it takes many years, especially in the Arctic, to return to its original condition, if it ever will. Wilderness does not need to be developed. It only needs to be set aside. Little money needs to be spent because wilderness takes care of itself. Wilderness is needed by man so that when the pressures imposed by society on his daily life get too strong, he can go to the wilderness areas where he can be alone and let his thoughts catch up with him. Being in wilderness is an emotionally refreshing experience. Wilderness is also needed by the grizzly bears, the wolves, and other creatures who need large territories to roam in unrestricted by man. They too have a right to live their lives as they should. We are co-inhabitants of this planet with them. Yesterday, Mr. Tussing said that things of this nature, such as the pipeline, must not be delayed too long because a dollar a few years from now will not be worth much as much as it is today. This reminds me of the story of the fellow who was speeding down the highway at a considerable rate of speed, and when finally stopped by the policeman and asked why he was in such a hurry, he replied that he didn't have any brakes and he was in a hurry to get home before he had an accident. Why rush the development of the North Slope oil just because of inflation? Why can't we solve that problem, or is it too difficult? From others, we have heard that the amount of petroleum and its associated products is constantly increasing. This is due mainly to our ever-increasing population. Let's solve the population problem then. The Earth can't support an ever-increasing population. When oil was discovered on the Kenai Peninsula, we heard statements to the effect that the Kenai oil field was second only to Saudi Arabia. If it is, and the need for additional oil is so great then, why not pump more oil from Kenai? We heard yesterday morning from various state officials that their departments and divisions had many regulations regarding the protection of the environment. How many state personnel were on the North Slope to ensure that these regulations were carried out from the beginning of the exploration? I doubt that there were many in this capacity, otherwise so many people at the science conference and here at the hearing would have stated, as they did, that there was much damage done. We also heard of the goodly amount of, quote, expertise, end quote, available in the state agencies and in Alaska to completely control adequately the conservation and development of the North Slope. I wonder who the experts really are, as the following example indicates. The authority to shut down seismic exploration on state lands in the Arctic was under the control of the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. Bob Weinhold, an employee and biologist for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, working under Ben Hilliker and Commissioner Reitz, was delegated the authority early in May, he deemed it necessary to shut down operations of the geophysical companies because of thawing. Someone complained and Reitz flew north to look at it. He countermanded the closure and seismic operations continued for days and or weeks longer. Commissioner Reitz was a political appointee, and I must add that not all political appointees act this way, and he did not have the, quote, expertise, end quote, that Mr. Weinhold had. If this is all the faith that the state has in its qualified employees working in the field, then I suggest that the state could save a lot of money by firing all its field employees and letting the expert, quote, commissioners do the work. I believe that the problem of development in the North Slope and much of the other parts of Alaska is of national concern as well as of state concern, because not only because of it is still under the jurisdiction of the federal government, but also because Alaska contains the last great areas of wilderness, most of which is unprotected. I seriously doubt that the ever-increasing numbers of tourists come to Alaska to see the Kenai oil field or to see the North Slope oil field. We must act now to prevent the helter-skelter development that is so prevalent in the lower 48 and set aside wilderness areas now so that people who come to Alaska can see what they wanted to see. Another statement we heard yesterday was that there are enough problems in the lower 48 to keep conservationists busy for a long time. We have been fighting long and hard on these problems and will continue to do so, but we will not leave Alaska nor stop fighting for what we believe in Alaska. We want to ensure that the problems encountered in the lower 48 do not become realities up here. I suggest that the Corps of Engineers be given the authority to solve the pollution problems so prevalent in the U.S. today. With their ability to obtain funds and the expertise available to them, much could be done to alleviate these problems. In closing, I would like to say that I am not against the orderly development of Alaska, and I am not unsympathetic with those who say Alaska needs a sound economic base, because it does, but not at the expense of destroying Alaska as people really like it, at the expense of with such a massive development. I only hope now that you will take this as a sincere statement on my part. As I said, I'm not an expert in the field, but these are my feelings, and I hope that you will sincerely take them into regard. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. The next witness is George Gilson, Mayor, Valdez, Alaska. Mr. Gilson present? Let the record show that there's no response. The next witness is John Miller, ESRO Station Director, Fairbanks, Alaska. Is Mr. Miller present? Let the record show there's no response. The next witness is Dr. Ronald Smith, Fairbanks, Alaska. Is Dr. Smith present? Let the record show there's no response. The next witness is Lawrence R. Mayo, Fairbanks, Alaska. Is Mr. Mayo present? Let the record show there's no response. The next witness is Charles Herbert, Anchorage, Alaska. Is Mr. Herbert present?
I believe he testified last evening.
Right. The next witness then is Terry Worrell, Fairbanks, Alaska. Let the record show that Terry Worrell is not present. The next witness then is John Kelsey, Anchorage, Alaska.
Mr. Secretary, Mr. Examiner, members of the panel, I am John Kelsey, President of the Alaska State Chamber of Commerce, with offices in Juneau and Anchorage, Alaska. Incidentally, my home is in Valdez, and I say incidentally because I wish to testify not as a citizen of that community, but as President of the Alaska State Chamber of Commerce. By way of personal qualification, I only want to say I was born, raised, educated through high school in Valdez, Alaska. My father was born in Juneau, Alaska, 1894, and his father practiced law in that city as early as 1890. Our state chamber organization is composed of some 450 business organizations throughout Alaska, from pulp mills in southeastern, to retail merchants in Anchorage, to doctors, lawyers, teachers, just plain people. As diverse as their interests often are on many subjects, our members have two things in common. One, an abiding interest in the sound and healthy development of Alaska, not only in its economy, but the very quality of life itself in this great land. And two, all our members are users of that land. Some use the recurring and carefully managed timber crops, others the fisheries resources, while still others utilize the wilderness and scenic values of Alaska as they develop our tourist industry. And every one of them uses the land personally for hunting, fishing, or for simple relaxation and solitude. Thus, my organization is vitally concerned with anything that will affect the development of Alaska or the possible multiple use of its lands. Obviously, the proposed pipeline does both. Mr. Secretary, you have heard proposals during these 2 days of hearings that run from one extreme to the other, each representing the views of a certain number of Alaskans. Some would have the major portion of Alaska preserved as a vast wilderness area, even to the exclusion of man. You have heard proposals to open up this and other segments of Alaska to unlimited exploitation. And you have heard a variety of views somewhere between those two positions. We have a similar, though not quite as wide, a disparity of viewpoints within our organization. But again, we agree on two principles. One, that you cannot have it both ways, that a decision must be made, a decision which we feel has already been made. Exploration has taken place. Large financial commitments have been made. Resource in quantity has obviously been discovered, and the gears of development have been put into motion. Secondly, we feel that for the future development of Alaska in its many aspects, the construction of the Trans-Alaskan pipeline system from Prudhoe Bay to Valdez in the Gulf of Alaska can, and indeed must, be included, with minimum damage to the other values inherent in the land. Much has been said about the mistakes of the past, the disfigurement caused by old methods of resource extraction, and so on. Those marks on our landscape were made by men with certain techniques and a semi-developed technology. Today, man possesses a vastly superior technology and can perform those same extractions of resources with little or no change to the environment. Witness the case of the Kenai Moose Range and the oil development in that area. This then brings us to the area of regulation. Insofar as we can determine, the suggested regulations will provide the necessary safeguards for the pipeline system. Certainly, this list, developed as it was by state, federal, and concerned private officials, should adequately protect the public interest. After all, both state and federal governments represent none other than the public interest. However, I am concerned about the criticism leveled at both state and federal agencies, since really they are nothing more than you and me, the people of this state and nation. In this, as in any other major development, cooperation is the key. All of us have responsibilities to see that proper and timely development takes place with as little disruption of the environment as is possible. Both state and federal agencies have dual responsibilities in this area. However, we feel that the state of Alaska, being closest and most directly involved in the current situation, should be charged with the primary responsibilities. We are aware that the state is not presently staffed to meet such responsibility, but in our opinion, neither is the federal government. We can assure this panel that the Alaska State Chamber of Commerce will support all necessary measures to acquire for Alaska the additional personnel and expertise needed. As for industry responsibilities, we invite your attention to the vast network of existing pipelines in our sister states. It is our opinion that these systems have proven the industry's ability to construct and maintain safe and totally integrated petroleum transportation facilities consistent with environmental considerations. Alaska's history for the past 100 years has been one of a struggle to attain the necessary economic development to establish a sound and self-supporting economy. We recognize that there have been false starts and mistakes made. However, if properly viewed, this can only aid us as we continue to develop our state. With the recent thrust for wise and orderly development initiated by then Governor Hickel, exploration has proceeded in many areas and has obviously been successful with regard to oil and specifically the North Slope. Keeping this in mind, we simply fail to see any merit in suddenly calling a halt to this forward movement. In conclusion, Mr. Secretary and members of the panel, we respectfully and strongly request that you urge the timely issuance of the right-of-way pipeline permit to allow early construction of the system. It has been previously pointed out that dollars delayed are dollars lost, not only to the oil industry, but to the state of Alaska and its people. Those dollars, gentlemen, will allow us for the first time to meet our obligations to our native citizens, to our poor, and finally to extricate Alaska from a deplorable welfare economy, living as a parasite on the federal government. I thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kelsey.
I would like to say that although I do not have any testimony to submit at this time, we will submit this testimony in writing within the 15-day limit. Thank you.
The next witness is Peggy Wayburn, San Francisco, California. Let the record show that there's no response. Is Eben Hobson in the room? Let the record show there's no response. This concludes the testimony or presentation, at least according to my records, of all parties who registered their desire to be heard. Are there any others who wish to be heard at this time? Yes. Will you state your name and spell it, please, and then give the reporter your address and your affiliation, if any?
Yes, my name is David Klein, K-L-E-I-N. I'd like to state that I did request to be heard, and I wrote on Monday to Anchorage to Mr. Pat Ryan, and apparently there was some oversight. My name wasn't included on the list. I did sign up yesterday morning, but apparently my name was called last evening.
I see your name on the list, and it was called last evening.
I'm sorry that I wasn't here then. I am a resident of the College area. I'm a professional ecologist. I've lived in Alaska for 19 years. My address is Yankovich Road. I'm also a member of the board of directors of the Alaska Conservation Society, and I'm presenting this testimony as a private citizen. Construction and operation of the proposed Trans-Alaska Pipeline from near Prudhoe Bay to Valdez and the associated road from Livengood North will result in widespread ecological disturbances. Because of the unique nature of this project, which undertakes engineering feats previously untested in the Arctic and subarctic, the magnitude of the ecological disturbances that will result cannot now be adequately assessed. In addition, knowledge of ecosystems in the North American Arctic and subarctic is scanty at best. The past two decades have seen great advances in our knowledge of the Antarctic continent, while basic ecological research in the North American Arctic and subarctic has been sadly neglected. In the absence of the basic ecological knowledge that is essential for establishing guidelines for pipeline location, construction, and operation, I urge the Secretary of the Interior to consider the pipeline right-of-way application with extreme caution and reservation. If the pressures for urgency and haste, which are associated with the oil industry in general, and in this instance with the planning for the construction of the pipeline, are acquiesced to, there will not be sufficient time for the scheduling of studies and investigations necessary to provide minimal guidelines to protect the multiple natural resources that will be affected. Therefore, the pressures for accelerated construction of the pipeline should be resisted, and further, it should be explicit that scheduling of construction ahead of the availability of basic ecological and engineering information creates a far greater risk of degradation of the natural environment and threat to fish and wildlife resources than would be the case if base studies could be completed. Responsibility for such added risks should therefore fall clearly on the Trans-Alaska Pipeline System, and there should be full understanding on their part that stipulations governing pipeline and road construction under such circumstances must of necessity be much more restrictive than would be the case if more time for preliminary investigations were available. If guidelines for pipeline location, construction, and operation must be established in the absence of basic information, it is far better to err through overcautiousness than to allow the needless destruction of the environment in a region where such destruction may be irreversible or at best may require scores of years for recovery. The resources involved in the pipeline construction and operation, the land, the waters, the fish and wildlife, the scenic and recreational values, as well as the oil itself, are the rightful property of all Americans, including Alaskans. While it may be in the best interests of the oil industry or a few Alaskan businessmen to proceed with blind haste, such haste is not in the best interests of Alaskans in general or other Americans. It cannot be denied that uncontrolled, accelerated oil development and extraction will bring dollars into the Fairbanks and Alaskan economies, but it will also create almost intolerable pressures on the residents of the affected areas through shortages of housing, overcrowded schools and services, and inflated prices. The losses measured in the quality of these people's lives will be great. More specifically, I request that the following problems associated with the location, construction, and operation of the pipeline be thoroughly examined and provisions made for their solution before a pipeline right-of-way is granted. Number one, the establishment of multiple transportation routes between Fairbanks and the North Slope for pipelines, roads, and railroads will create far greater problems of environmental degradation than if these routings were restricted to a single transportation corridor. Secretary of Transportation Volpe stressed the advantages of this concept in a statement he made here last week. The Winter Hall Road from Livengood to the North Slope already provides a vivid illustration of this point. The section of this road from Livengood to the Yukon River will soon be duplicated by an all-season road in construction with the pipeline routing. This region is characterized by low hills with numerous small drainage systems and permafrost on north-facing slopes. By late summer, severe erosion was occurring on sections of the road that traverse these north slopes. This is the result of degradation of the permafrost because of the removal of the insulating vegetative cover. Slumping and flowing of these light, extremely fine-grained aeolian soils is occurring and now threatens siltation of the many streams in the area. In addition, and in this case perhaps more importantly, unsightly scars are being created on the landscape. Number two, several areas along the proposed pipeline route have extremely high recreational values, either at present or in the future. Examples are the Keystone Canyon, the Gulkana River area, the Richardson Clearwater, Grayling Lake, and Galbraith Lake. Additional such areas are also known to Bureau of Land Management specialists. The value of these areas for recreation is dependent upon their integrity as water systems, as well as their unique scenic values. If at all possible, rerouting of the pipeline in these areas should be accomplished to avoid them. Even with the minimum of disturbance possible associated with the construction and operation of the pipeline, the natural features of such areas would be significantly altered and their recreational value reduced. Grayling Lake, named for its fabulous fishing qualities, completely occupies the narrow mountain valley in which it occurs. It is readily apparent that insufficient space exists in this valley for the construction of a road and a pipeline without endangering the lake itself. Number three, mountain sheep populations occur along the pipeline route in the Brooks Range, particularly in the Attigan River Valley. Mountain sheep are known to be highly traditional in use of their mountain habitat. In Canada, sheep have abandoned portions of their range as a result of human disturbance, and once the tradition of use is broken, reestablishment of sheep in such areas is extremely difficult. To avoid this problem in the Brooks Range, disturbance of sheep associated with construction of the road and pipeline should be kept to an absolute minimum. Harassment of sheep by survey and logistic aircraft should be avoided. Pump stations, which would remain permanent sources of disturbance, should be located so as to minimize this problem. Thank you for the opportunity to present this testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Klein. Did you want to offer that as an exhibit? We'll mark that then as exhibit number 49. Is there anyone else present who desires to be heard at this time? Please state your name and spell it for the reporter, and then give your address and your affiliation, if any.
All right, I'm John A. excuse me. I'm John A. Carlson, S-O-N, Chairman of the Fairbanks North Star Borough in Fairbanks, Alaska. And I also apologize, I wasn't here yesterday evening, I believe what my name was called. Mr. Secretary and panel, I have been requested by the Fairbanks North Star Borough to appear and testify in support of the road and pipeline. Open-minded, if we are to accomplish anything, we must approach the problem open-minded and with a goal. Open-minded in that the people of Alaska realize the need to preserve their country. They realize there are safe and unsafe ways to do nearly everything. Knowledge of doing things safely is gained by experience, and the people of Alaska have this experience and knowledge. The goal to be the construction of a pipeline and transportation facilities from the North Slope to a southern terminus. This, the Fairbanks North Star Borough supports and urges immediate approval of a right-of-way and construction permit. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. We will mark your statement as exhibit number 50. Is there anybody else present that desires to be heard at this time?
Mr. Mack?
Yes.
I believe there will be letters of expression that did not were not intended as testimony, but were it was desired that they be considered part of the record that will be received at the office in Anchorage. Would you like, for the benefit of the record, to describe how you'd want these handled?
Well, as I previously, you mean this is the filing within the 15th?
We have 15. It would be through the 15th that the record will be open.
Yes, as I previously stated, the hearing record will be held open for a period of 15 days or until September 15, 1969. During which time written statements or presentations will be received for inclusion with the record of this proceeding. Any such statements should be filed with Mr. Patrick Ryan, Regional Coordinator for all Interior Agencies, at 632 6th Avenue, Room 410, Anchorage, Alaska. Now, perhaps I should state again that copies of the transcript of this proceeding, which will include everything that was spoken during the hearing, can be obtained by making arrangements with the court reporter, Mrs. Kling. Copies of the statements or other documents that have been received for inclusion with the record can be obtained from either the Washington office, the Fairbanks office, or the Anchorage office of the Bureau of Land Management by making appropriate arrangements with those offices. Now, one last time, is there anyone else present who desires to be heard at this time?
Mr. Mensch, if I could interrupt at that point. We have just contacted the mayor of Valdez, Mr. George Gibson. Mr. Gilson, who had expected to be here, and I know very much wanted to be here. And Mr. Horton has just talked with Mr. Gilson on the telephone. He's having a little weather problem, and it's uncertain whether he's going to be able to get here or not. I think the likelihood is now that he will probably not make it. He said that if he were unable to be here personally, he assured the panel that Mr. John Kelsey, who just testified a moment or so ago, reflected his views. And also, he knew the sentiments of the people of Valdez and asked that this statement be reflected on the record. He will submit a written statement for the record within the next few days.
I think we should have the record show at this point, though, that there has been no response to my questions as to whether or not there's anyone else present who desires to be heard. Now, before we close this portion of the record and adjourn the hearing, I believe the Undersecretary would like to make a closing statement. But Mr. Secretary, before you do that, I see Mrs. Wayburn has just entered the room, so we will call Peggy Wayburn as the next witness.
Thank you very much. I'm sorry to be so very late. Mr. Secretary and member of the panel, my name is Mrs. Peggy Wayburn. I come from San Francisco, California. My occupation is that of a housewife, and I'm the mother of four children. I wish that I were testifying before you as an Alaskan, because I love Alaska. Unfortunately, I didn't see Alaska for the first time until 1967. However, I was so taken with the state that I have been back now each year since then, and this is my third visit to Alaska. During the three visits that I have made to the state, I have traveled east from the Canadian border, west to Dillingham, Nome, Kotzebue, north as far as Point Barrow, and south as far as Ketchikan. I don't intend to bore you with a recital of all that I have seen in between, but I do think it's pertinent to say that I have flown the length of the proposed pipeline. I have flown the length that is north of Fairbanks, and I am familiar with the Chugach Mountains to the south. I have also seen from the air the proposed terminus of the pipeline at Valdez. I have also flown the length of the Winter Road, which was constructed last year. I visited in both the Brooks Range and in the Arctic Wildlife Refuge, so that I have seen firsthand many of the areas that we are talking about. I might also add that since I've been in Alaska, I have not only traveled on the rivers, I've walked on the tundra, and I've even been rolled in the Toklat River. So with this and with my strong feeling for Alaska, I'm especially happy to be able to testify here in Alaska. I also want to testify as a taxpayer with something of a vested interest, I believe, in this state, perhaps more of a vested interest than I have in other of our 50 states. As a taxpayer, I believe I also have something of a vested interest in the oil industry and what the oil industry is doing. I certainly am most concerned about it from this point of view. Out of all that I have seen of Alaska, it emerges that this is a very special state. It's special in its location, its climate, its people, its history, its geology, and its economic problems. The Congress, I believe, tried to take this into account at the time that statehood was established. And in the Constitution of the State of Alaska, there are many special things which have been arranged trying to meet a special situation. It appears to me very clearly that in building or in attempting to build anything in the Arctic, there are very, very special considerations which must be taken into account. Anyone who has seen the area is aware of this, and anyone who has studied the problems of permafrost, of the tundra, the delicate things that are in the Arctic, must recognize this fact. Therefore, I believe that it is not only in order for the federal government to make stipulations for any work that is done in the Arctic, I think it is essential. I strongly support very careful stipulations on any development or any building or construction in the Arctic. I can understand how Alaskans might feel that the discovery of oil on the North Slope and the development of oil, the building of this pipeline, all was a great bonanza, because there are obviously economic problems here. I wish I could agree with them that it was the bonanza that they seem to feel it is. Being a Californian, I cannot. It wasn't so awfully long ago that we in California were looking for more people, more industry, more roads, more development. And we in California got it. We have more people, we have more industry, we have more roads, we have more development, we have more cars, and if I may say so, we have more headaches. Somehow, the economic bonanza that was supposed to come to the state has resulted in all of us paying higher taxes, for poorer and poorer facilities being provided by the government. We've lost in our environment. Our environment, it has deteriorated terribly. We have all these great roads, a network of roads that people have been talking about here, and we get in our cars to travel somewhere, and it's almost impossible to get out of town because there are so many cars. The beautiful, warm, clear skies of Southern California are just a dream of the past, as anyone who has been down into the southern part of the state must know. So that while we got what we wanted, we've been paying for it ever since. And then last year, of course, we had the bonus of the oil leak off of Santa Barbara. I therefore, personally, oppose the granting of this application to TAPS. And I urge all people concerned with this oil production, if I may be permitted the pun that was voiced at the AAAS meeting, I urge them to look before they leak. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Wayburn. Mr. Secretary, do you wish to make a closing statement at this time?
Thank you, Ms. Wayburn.
Thank you.
First, I want to express the appreciation of the Department of the University of Alaska for its cooperation and hospitality in making these excellent facilities available, and for all of the other arrangements that the university made that enabled this meeting to be the success that it has. And my thanks go particularly to President Wood, who personally made the arrangements for us. I know I speak for all the members of the federal panel in saying that I personally believe that these hearings have been most informative, constructive, and helpful to us in the Department of Interior, and I have no doubt helpful to those in the state and industry who are also equally concerned with this problem. I think as we've listened here over the last day or so, that we have heard a number who have tried to make us see the problem as all black or as all white. Either that all development is bad, or alternatively that all conservation is bad. I think most of us recognize that it's not quite that simple. I certainly understand and recognize that most Alaskans are concerned, and legitimately so, with the proper economic development, resource development of this great state. I've also been impressed, listening to the witnesses, with the fact that the majority of Alaskans, the same people, are also, at the same time, deeply concerned that the beauty and wilderness values that perhaps caused them to come here in the first place and to love the state also, at the same time, be protected. Thus, the task we all have, and I think the task which, again, I would say the vast majority of people of Alaska, I'm sure, support, is to develop guidelines for development which are compatible with the conservation of the best of this state. We intend to move forward in the department as expeditiously and as effectively as we can to resolve any problems that may exist. You'll recall that yesterday I established a working group to get on particularly with the problems of the permafrost and soil stability that I think many of us feel are perhaps the most critical element in the pipeline matter. That group met last night, and I understand has already made considerable progress. We have arranged to have a further meeting of our federal people with the TAPS representatives later this morning. And I mention this only to evidence the strong desire and the sincere efforts of all concerned in this matter to identify the problems and deal with them in effective and constructive fashion, and certainly not in any spirit of delay or obstructionism. Again, I say I think this has been a most constructive meeting, and I appreciate, we all appreciate, the great interest here in Fairbanks that has been shown in this hearing, the patience of those who have sat through a long 12 hours yesterday to be heard, and came again this morning. I do not know for certain whether we will have a further hearing in Washington. That is not yet decided, but it is a likelihood. It's a possibility. Any of the members of the panel? Then this, thank you, Mr. Mesh, for your very effective chairing of the meeting. Appreciate it very much, and we appreciate the help of our reporter, and look forward to receiving the record in the very near future. Thank you all very much for coming. This hearing is adjourned.